Today's edition of the Daily Caller podcast is brought to you by Life Change Tea.
Why go to getthetea.com? Because this important news could change your life. Socrates made a statement saying that all disease starts in the gut. Take care of your gut, and well, the rest speaks for itself. Life Change Tea is a wonderful way to aid in your digestion. Brew it, steep it, drink it, and feel it go to work. We at Life Change Tea have been around for years helping people just like you feel better. Lots of testimonials and lots of happy people. Log on to getthetea.com. That's getthetea.com. Getthetea.com.
Alrighty, hello again, everyone, and welcome to it. It's the Daily Caller podcast for the sixth day of April 2020. I'm Derek Hunter. I am your host. Welcome to the program. Appreciate you tuning in. Even though you're not really tuning in, downloading, streaming, doing all those other things. However, you kids are getting carrier pigeons to bring you an MP3 file. I don't know how this stuff works. Thank you. If you've been having trouble, I've been getting a ton of emails, and I've responded to, I think, every one of them. We've changed the way that I upload the file now at night so that it goes everywhere. I populate all the stuff. It used to be that I would upload it into, not that you need to know this, but I had uploaded it into WordPress in the back end of the Daily Caller, and that would feed iTunes. Everything else, that would be like midnight, anytime between midnight and 2 a.m. And then in the morning, when the editors would check my crappy writing of the post, they would do whatever they do that fed it every place else, the Stitchers, the SoundClouds, the this, the that, the all, whatever you use, if it isn't iTunes. Well, now I upload it directly to SoundCloud, which as soon as I hit publish there or make public or whatever the hell it is I hit, it goes supposedly everywhere. But somehow in the course of that, I don't know why, I haven't even asked, it doesn't matter to me. The name of the show file somehow has changed. It used to have my name in it. Now it doesn't have my name in it. And somehow that means that the subscriptions and the feeds of people who used to download it through secondary apps or whatever, that chain, that rope or whatever is broken. It's broken now. And it has to be reset. So if you're having difficulty and you can only stream the show and you can't download it, some people like to listen at double speed for whatever reason, and apparently you can't do that on some of these things with streaming. You can just search for Daily Caller. You don't have to search for my name. Search for Daily Caller, and then subscribe that way. Unsubscribe, resubscribe, whatever the hell it is. That should take care of it. If it doesn't, you can email me, Derek@dailycaller.com, and I will forward that to somebody who might be able to figure out what the problem is in your particular situation, but that seems to work for 99% of the people. Some people just need to restart their devices afterwards. I don't understand it. But yeah, technology, it's supposed to make our life easier, and it so often doesn't. All right, action-packed show for today. I'm not sure it's going to be a full hour. I'm having back spasms. My back problem isn't back pain. It's spasms. And it's random spasms, like, which I guess is the definition of spasms. And it's just awful. So I've been sleeping on a heat pad and trying to get through this that way. So I'll go for as long as I can. I don't know if I'm going to have a guest. Just depends. I thought about a couple people, but then I just decided there's enough that I could rant for this whole damn thing. I want to start off, first of all, let's give a shout out to our sponsor, Life Change Tea. Yes, our Democratic friends definitely need this. Don't be like them. Don't get stopped up. Make sure you're regular and keep everything flowing and going, if you're knowing what I'm saying. Go to getthetea.com. Choose your flavor of tea. It's the tea that makes you go. You brew up a whole gallon of it, even in these trying times. You bought all that toilet paper. You might as well put it to use. It cleans you out. And it allows you, more importantly than keeping you regular, it allows you to absorb more of the nutrition that you ingest in your food. That's a great thing. It's a good thing. It's a wonderful thing, especially now because the nutrition feeds your body and your immune system and all of that. So you go, you get it, you brew it up, you drink a cup a day. That's it. Don't overdo it. A cup a day does the trick, and you will notice more energy throughout your day. You'll feel better. Cleans you out, gets that filth out of you, and then you're suddenly going, wait a second, I'm not changing what I'm eating. Why am I feeling better? It's because your body is able to absorb the nutrition that you are eating. At checkout, enter promo code Derek, click apply, you get free shipping on top of the great sale prices that they have, and you will soon be a believer. GetTheTea.com, promo code Derek, and check it out. Okay, I want to start off, it's really going to be more of a lecture show today than audio highlights, simply because the audio that's out there, this is a Jake Tapper virtue signaling monologue that goes on for about 4 minutes. We need a plan, Mr. President. We need a plan. Carry the daily coronavirus task force press briefing, Jake. Talk to your fellow CNN employees. Here's an idea, Jake Tapper, and I'm not going to play you the clip because it's a waste of time. It's like an Oscar clip from, it's probably an Emmy clip from his TV show on Sunday, where he's very earnestly saying, we need the president to lead. You got to tell us how we're going to get out of this, Mr. President. What are we going to do? How are we going to start the economy? Blah, 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 blah. Just as a reminder, CNN no longer carries the coronavirus task force briefing. Particularly, occasionally they dip into the statements. They don't take the question and answer. They claim it's because the president just lies so much. Oh, he just lies so much. So then they turn to their panel of morons who don't know what the hell they're talking about, and next to none of them are medical doctors in any way, shape, or form. Gloria Borger and Van Jones know a lot more about coronavirus than Dr. Fauci, Dr. Birx. That's the idea, anyway, or the implication. But if Jake Tapper really cares so deeply and so desperately about the information that he says he seeks, that he wants to know what's the plan, perhaps he could go to the White House. Jake Tapper used to be the White House correspondent for ABC News. The process of designating someone at a news organization to be a White House correspondent to get access to the White House press briefing is fairly simple, can be done quickly and easily. I don't even think there's a fee involved in it. So instead of sending, Caitlin Collins or Jim Acosta to ask their stupid questions about, Mr. President, back on February 2nd, you said Americans are going to be just fine. Well, Mr. President, some Americans have died. Why did you lie to the country? Instead of asking questions like that, like the normal dipshits that they send to the White House press briefing, Jake, why don't you hop in your town car, have your driver take you to 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, and attend one of these briefings yourself, at which time you could ask all the questions that you want. Donald Trump stands there sometimes upwards of 2 hours, taking question upon question upon question, answering them. Then, if you don't like his answer, you can ask the vice president. If you don't like that answer, you can ask the Treasury Secretary or Fauci or Birx or whoever else happens to be there. Instead, you decided to take Sunday morning to peacock your feathers out and puff your chest up and let the whole world know how morally superior you think you are to everybody else. You're a fraud, Jake. Because even if you don't want to go down there, if you're too scared to go down to the White House, Jake, and I understand it, I wouldn't blame you. You don't want to go into a small area. You've got a family at home. You send Jim Acosta there every day or other CNN trolls. Send them with a list of questions. It is theoretically their job to try and gather as much information as humanly possible from the president, the White House, and all its employees. Have them ask a useful question for once in their miserable lives. Now, I understand it may take an extra long phone call to convey to these morons why it is you want this information relative to what it is they usually try to mine, which is crap, but it'd be worth it. Because then you could have saved yourself 4 full minutes on your television show on Sunday. You could have, I don't know, tried to convey some news. I realize that's not where the money is at CNN. It's just a thought, just a suggestion, because listening to Jake Tapper whine about how he doesn't know what he wants to know reminds me a lot of somebody who's in a room standing across from a chair that is empty, whining that they are not sitting in that chair. Okay. I really wish I were in that chair. Or that chair looks really comfortable. Seems like all my problems would go away if I were sitting in that chair. Okay, go sit in the chair. Move your ass and go sit in the chair. If that's what you want, take care of this problem. No. Government should make sure. Somebody needs to make sure that I'm in that chair. Somebody should move me over to that chair. Well, you've got legs. You've got feet. Move them and go sit in the chair. Jake, if you want information, go sit in the chair. Seems pretty simple. He won't. They won't. Because once you get the answers to your questions, you can't bitch about your questions anymore. Jake, isn't that really the problem? Of course it is. And we are really out of problems in the grand scheme of things in society. So just bitching about stuff is, I mean, hell, they postponed the Olympics. Let's just redefine what constitutes Olympic events. Let's make it the bitching Olympics, okay? And everybody can bitch and whine and moan, and then the judges will hold up their scorecards. And Jake, I think you would definitely at least podium with your stupid little monologue. Of course, there's a lot of competition up there. So I'm not sure that you'll win, but you've got a pretty strong case. Other strong cases, and that's what I'm going to focus on in this. It's kind of hilarious to watch the left look at what's going on in the world and desperately scramble to try and make it fit their worldview, their narrative, their left-wing narrative. Remember, their left-wing narrative has always been and always will be, this country's horrible, racist, misogynistic, sexist, transphobic, blah, 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 awful country, needs to be destroyed and remade, needs to be destroyed and remade. In the Washington Post on Sunday, they have a piece up there, but it took two people to write this, Bethany L. Jones and Jonathan S. Jones. Maybe they're brother and sister, maybe they're married, who cares? She is a master's in public affairs fellow at Cornell's Institute for Public Affairs. She specializes in human rights, conflict recovery, and pandemic response. He is a historian of American medicine. What the hell? When you hang out in like the library of a medical school, just in case somebody wants to know what they used to do. He's a PhD candidate in the Department of History of Birmingham University and incoming postdoctoral scholar at Penn State's Richard Civil War Era Center. Not sure why I would listen to either one of these things, but they're outraged over they're not really outraged over the tweet. They saw it as a jumping off point. If Donald Trump had tweeted something like this, they would have been outraged. Their piece is entitled, Governor Cuomo Was Wrong. COVID-19 is anything but an equalizer. The subheadline, the pandemic will strike the poor harder around the globe. As if, you know, yes, can I help you? Yes, I'm COVID-19 out here, the coronavirus. I'm going to come in your house and infect all of you. Wait. Let me slide my bank statement out through the mail slot and you'll see that I have a lot of money. And then, Well, you do have a lot of money. All right. Well, sorry about that. I'll go find somebody with less money. That ain't how viruses work. Now, listen to the way that they frame this. In a well-meaning tweet Tuesday afternoon, well-meaning because it's a Democrat. A well-meaning tweet Tuesday afternoon, New York Governor Andrew M. Cuomo called the novel coronavirus, quote, the great equalizer. Capable of sickening anyone, 20-something to senior citizen, ordinary Americans, or famous actors. all of us could potentially contract COVID-19 in the coming days and weeks, including the governor's brother, CNN anchor Chris Cuomo, who came down with the disease Tuesday. Certainly, Governor Cuomo's broader point that no one is immune to the coronavirus is soberingly valid, but his phrasing is misleading. Now here's where the liberal stupid comes in, because it's what he said. What he said is true. Anybody can get it. But anyway, simply put, to call any virus a great equalizer is false. Pandemics amplify existing inequalities, usually hurting poor worse than the wealthy. A century ago, history's greatest pandemic, the 1918 influenza outbreak, taught us as much. And they go on and list, and then the entirety of the piece is about how the 1918 flu, the Spanish flu, hit poor people. Now, back in 1918, there wasn't much of a middle class to speak of, so you were either poor or rich. That doesn't really make a lot of sense. The world class, the middle class, didn't really come into being until later, not as anything of a force, anyway. But things have changed. I don't know if they know this over at the Washington Post, or these two Joneses know this, that things have changed in the last 102 years. And, it doesn't really, viruses don't give a damn what your income is. Again, they don't care. They have a narrative, and they're looking desperately. They're like my daughter playing with Play-Doh. There's a model, there's a mold, and whatever Play-Doh it is, she's going to, no matter how much there is, she's going to cram into this mold, because that's where it's supposed to go. In the minds of the left, their narrative is where things are supposed to go, and they're going to cram everything they can into that mold. This was as evidenced by this piece from ProPublica, a tweet by AOC, where she said, "This pandemic is hurting black and brown people more than anybody else." How do you know that? Data is not explicitly collected on a wide scale in the number of coronavirus deaths by race. That's just a fact. The Baltimore Sun had articles last week of liberals bitching about, we need to know how this is playing because we need to know a racial breakdown of the victims of coronavirus. Why? If it's hitting white people more at a disproportionate, is the word they love to use on the left, at a disproportionately higher rate, will you care more? Will you care less? Does it really matter, or does it matter that human beings are being impacted by this? Because that would be the scale that a non-racist piece of shit would use, right? Human beings are being impacted by this, therefore I care. But if you want to know, I need to know the racial breakdown, and if that will impact anything about you, anything about your response, you're probably a racist piece of crap. And I mean that with all due respect, which is none. But this is how the left's mind works. How can I exploit this? How can I use this to my advantage? What can I do to win, to get more votes, to beat those evil Republicans? Republicans should probably start trying to point this out more, or at least find a way to campaign through this, because Democrats are not stopping. They're not even slowing down. ProPublica has a piece. Early data shows African Americans have contracted and died of coronavirus at an alarming rate. Subheadline, again, contains that buzzword about equalizer. The subheadline, no, the coronavirus is not an equalizer. Black people are being infected and dying at higher rates. Here's what Milwaukee is doing about it, and why governments need to start releasing data on race and COVID-19 patients. They want that number. They're going to be so disappointed if it's not. Oh, what are they going to do? They're going to chant the virus away. Hey, hey, ho, ho, racist virus, have to go. And that will keep it out. The ProPublica piece starts, as public health officials watched cases rise in March. Too many in the black community shrugged off warnings. Rumors and conspiracy theories proliferated on social media, pushing the bogus idea that black people are somehow immune to the disease. And much of the initial focus was on international travel, so those who knew no one returning from Asia or Europe were quick to dismiss the risks. You gotta love that. Right there, they just solved any mystery they have in the numbers coming out of Milwaukee. Right? Didn't they? Some people bought into this crap idea that black people were immune. So they said, we're immune. Let's go tiptoeing through the tulips. And then there's other people who said, well, I never went to Asia. I don't know anybody who went to Europe and Asia. I'm perfectly fine. Let's go skipping off la-di-da. That's the opening paragraph. That should be the only paragraph, but it's not. When the shelter-in-place order came, there was natural pushback among those who recalled other painful government restrictions, including segregation and mass incarceration. On where black people could, there were government restrictions on where black people could walk and gather. Now, again, segregation, horrible, didn't really exist in Milwaukee, by the way. I don't know if you're familiar with geography, but it's a little bit above the Mason-Dixon line, okay? And mass incarceration. Well, that is, of course, a bogus sort of absolution of people in mass based on their race by the Democratic Party in an attempt to get their votes. You didn't do anything wrong. It's evil whitey in the society that caters to them, that puts you in prison. It's not, you know, the 40 pounds of H found in the trunk of your car. No, no, no. It's the racism of society drove you to do that, not the gobs of cash you make doing it. That sort of crap. So again, liberalism, Democrat policies, if you want to go back to segregation, Democrat policies and Democrat institutions and Democrat ideology are responsible, is what ProPublica is saying. Well, it's not what they're saying. They're not saying it directly, but that's the interpretation you can get. But again, if you believe the idea that you're immune to some virus because of your race, I'm not going out on a limb here. You're dumb. You're dumb. It doesn't matter what your race is. You're dumb. A virus doesn't give a crap what your skin color is. A virus has better things to do. A virus does one thing: invade cells, reproduce, kill that cell, repeat. That's what it does. Tries to do it as often as possible before the body's immune system comes in and shuts it down. Tries to do it fast. Tries to do it quick. It doesn't care. Doesn't go, wait a second, is this a, what is this, a black guy, Native American guy, white guy, what do we got going on here? Not really sure. All right. No, doesn't care. You don't really look like your race when you're inside your cells and you're a virus. But if you believe stupid ideas and you have places like, oh, New York City, where public officials are telling people, urging people, nudging people to go out as frequent, as often, or as recently as 3 weeks ago. Go out like nothing's going to happen. Don't worry. There's nothing to this. Why? Go out. It's important for the economy. Did you go out? Then, yeah, I can see why you'd have mixed messages. Then, because a couple of weeks after that, you tell people you must self-quarantine. Well, in major cities like New York, like Milwaukee, people tend to live on top of each other in big buildings. And if you live in a 10-story apartment building, the odds are pretty high that you will have struck up at least conversations with people who live in that building as well, if only because of familiarity. You see them at the mailboxes, you see them on the elevators, whatever it is, you see them around the grounds. And in times when you are stuck in a building, you might go, oh, I don't want to sit in my apartment anymore. I'm going to go downstairs and see what Earl is up to. Hey, Earl, what's going on? Oh, come on in. Yeah, we're quarantining. We're quarantining. Not really in keeping with the spirit of what a quarantine is. But hey, when public health officials and public politicians, our local ones especially, are telling you, because I don't think these people are sitting around watching the daily coronavirus task force briefings. Call me crazy. I suspect these are not heavy Republican or Donald Trump voters. So they're likely not going to be tuned in every day with a notepad trying to figure out what the latest rules on social distancing are. They're likely watching Tiger King, which I tried to watch over the weekend. I got to like most of one episode. I was kind of tired and still not sure what it's about, so I stopped watching. I'll finish it at some point. But yes, stupidity. Misleading local politicians, generations of Democratic failed policies, and rumor-mongering paranoia crap online all contributed to why, if this is even true, since we don't really have the data, why I would say poor people, not black people, are being hit. Because I don't think that anybody who lives in a poor neighborhood, Democrat-controlled cities, generationally, I don't think, again, you're going to find much deviation when it comes to race. It just has, that's just a convenient scapegoat for Democrats. That's where they live. That's where they're comfortable. Much like a virus thrives in monkey kidneys, Democratic policies thrive in trying to stir up fear and anger and resentment at all times. They don't really inspire. Ever notice Democrats, for all the hope and change stuff that Barack Obama tried to sell the American public, there wasn't a whole lot of hope. He sure didn't bring in any change, but there wasn't a whole lot of hope we can do better. There were no aspirational goals, aside from a couple of buzzwords here and there. As everything else was, this country's terrible, this country's horrible, you need government to fix it. Has government fixed anything? You see government fixing anything in the last 20, 30 years? I haven't seen government fixing anything. And I have a job where I'm supposed to look and see what the government's doing and fixing problems. But of course, they don't. They can't. It's not really what the federal government is designed to do. One thing I've noticed throughout this coronavirus mess is, you remember all those mayors and governors walking around going, we don't need Washington telling us what to do. We got everything figured out. We got it. And then suddenly the feces hits the fan and they're like, oh, wait a second. We need Washington to order us medical supplies. Well, why didn't the hospital order medical supplies? Why didn't you order medical supplies? Why is your first instinct to run to Washington, D.C. to look for your medical supplies? Why didn't you stock up on them? Well, the president didn't have a plan to deal with a pandemic. Did you? Did you? Because it's kind of your job, too. All these Democrats bitching going, well, we must look into why the president downplayed all of this and what the president's response was. Okay, show me your pandemic bill that was introduced before now. Show it to me. Show me how those big bad Republicans or mean old Donald Trump said, no, I'm not going to sign this bill. I'm going to veto it. Show me what you were fighting for and everybody else just said no to. Can you do that? You can't do that because you didn't do that. It's the president's responsibility. I'm a member of Congress. Are you not supposed to look out for the well-being of your constituents? Are you not supposed to do your damn job? Or if the president was woefully ill-prepared, is it not your job to do oversight on the executive branch? There are literally endless streams of questions and a limitless pile of hypocrisy to go around if what Democrats are saying is true. Of course, as is usually the case, what Democrats are saying is not true. Nobody saw this coming. Who sits around and thinks about the, you know, if you want to fire somebody, who sits around and didn't replenish the national facilities, the storage facilities for emergency preparedness after the Obama administration depleted them back in 2009, 2010 with the swine flu. Who did that? Whose job was that? Maybe if that same person is still there, maybe you fire them, because I don't think that the president sits down every day or any day with a gigantic checklist of things that they go, well, how many N95 masks do we have in storage around the country? No, people have jobs that are supposed to make sure that the required or necessary things are in stock. If they did have that job and didn't do that job, then fire them. It's pretty simple, pretty basic stuff. Anyway, pretty simple, pretty basic stuff. Just like hydration, let's talk about our second sponsor, ladies and gentlemen. Look, top performers in business and sports often attribute their success to their morning routine, whether it's waking up early, setting their goals for the day, exercise, meditation, whatever it is. But not everyone has the time to do it all. With Hydrant, you can jumpstart your mornings. Did you know that 75% of us are walking around every day chronically dehydrated? We're suffering needlessly from frequent headaches, energy slumps, and poor focus, and it doesn't have to be this way. You want to kick the coffee habit, mostly because it's gross, but also because you just don't want to pump a bunch of caffeine into your body, but you're worried about losing the energy? Well, to avoid the morning sluggishness and that midday slump, you need to make sure you're hydrated. Hydrant creates flavored electrolyte packets. Flavored electrolyte packets you mix directly into your water and make hydrating your body easy and delicious. Yes, subtle little flavors thrown right in your water. They're very good. As a matter of fact, they're quite good. Each rapid hydrant mix has four essential electrolytes your body needs: sodium, potassium, magnesium, and zinc, and they help you hydrate quickly and stay hydrated all day. And Hydrant is backed by research. The formula was developed by Oxford scientists to provide perfectly balanced, efficient hydration. There's no synthetic colors or artificial sweeteners. The formula is vegan, if that matters to you, and you can choose between three different flavors and a variety pack, whatever you want. Hydrant starts at just $1 a day for a 30-day supply, and you can save even more with a monthly subscription. But right now, you save even more. 25% off your first order. As a matter of fact, if you go to drinkhydrant.com and enter the promo code CALLER at checkout, that's drinkhydrant, drinkhydrant.com. Enter promo code CALLER. You get 25% off your first order. Drinkhydrant.com, promo code CALLER. I like the grapefruit flavor, but everybody's different. God, Siri, stupid watch, shut up. Anyway, let's talk now about the numbers game, because this is something that is going to be a big deal. I don't know if you have read my column yesterday on townhall.com. If not, you should. I am recording this on Sunday, which means that Saturday's numbers are the latest numbers that we have. And I just want to point out a discrepancy. This is something that I did with Sean Davis's tweets the other day, and now I've updated it and asked a few more questions in my column. But just to give it some perspective, as we're all sitting around here hunkered down. Now, again, I'm not saying this is a done deal. I'm saying that if this stays this way, we have to reevaluate our strategy and we have to reopen the economy. That's pretty simple, because the numbers of projections are not matching up with the numbers in reality. Now, according to the University of Washington, the Institute for Health, whatever it is, the one that's funded by Bill Gates, for Saturday, the 5th of April, the model for the University of Washington projected that we would need 179,267 beds in the hospital for coronavirus patients. It's actually a range between 126,000 and 225,000, the median being 179,000 and change beds. The actual number of people currently, as of this recording, hospitalized in the country, is 23,061. Now, I have to put a caveat on that. This does not include numbers from every single state. Not every state has reported numbers. Alaska, for example, hasn't reported current numbers. They've only reported 20 total hospitalizations. We don't know the current numbers. American Samoa, the same thing. Arizona, the same thing. Other states have. California, for example, and New York. So we have the most populous states. We have the big states. We have all this information. So either the remaining states are wildly overrun and they're smaller states, right? They're not the big states. Hawaii currently doesn't list current numbers. They've had a total of 19 hospitalizations, but they don't say how many are in there right now. So that's a massive Hawaii, Arkansas, Alaska, they would have to be overrun, literally overrun and too busy to report their numbers for the numbers of people in the hospital because of coronavirus to come anywhere close to what the models are telling us they would be at this time. More importantly, the ICU beds, the intensive care unit beds, this is where it gets dicey. This is where we were supposed to be. This is why we did all the social distancing. This is why we went on lockdown. We could not, it was not because there was going to be hundreds of millions of Americans dead, nothing like that. It was because we did not want the hospital system to become overwhelmed. It's something I'm in favor of. I don't want the hospital system to become overwhelmed. For the hospital system to become overwhelmed, it's not just a matter of the numbers of people hospitalized. It's a matter of the numbers of people in intensive care unit beds, because people having heart attacks, people in car accidents, so on and so forth, everything that goes on, those people need intensive care too. So you add, a ton of people to intensive care beds, and suddenly everybody who needs an intensive care bed throughout the normal course of human existence suddenly can't do it, can't get it, and people are dying. That was the argument, a valid argument. But at what point do we say, wait a second, maybe we miscalculated here? Well, the number of people who would be in dire need of an intensive care unit as of Sunday or Saturday the 5th is, according to the model, the projections, anywhere between 21,000 and 43,000. That's an average, puts the average at 33,000 people. The actual number is 5,497. Now, 5,497 more people in intensive care than would necessarily need to be there is an uptick, no doubt. But it is not overwhelming. It is nowhere near overwhelming. In fact, the comfort ship, the hospital ship, that the military hospital ship that was brought down and is docked in New York, has four patients. What are they there for? They're there to take the overflow, because the hospitals in New York City were supposed to be overwhelmed with coronavirus patients. But it hasn't happened. Now, I'm glad it hasn't happened. I don't want it to happen. But it's something we have to look at and consider, and maybe come to think that we could be going about this all wrong. Now, the numbers are supposed to get much worse. We've been told that in the next week or two, things are going to get significantly worse, as a matter of fact. Horrible, horrible things are going to come. The big ramp up is about to start. Well, New York's numbers actually went down a little bit yesterday, which is great news. If that's the case, and if the numbers and the projections end up being continually not only wrong, but wildly wrong, we need to look at changing what we're doing. The number of ventilators, according to the University of Washington model for yesterday, was projected to be 26,000. So anywhere between 17,000 and 34,000. The average, you cut it in half, is 26,000. The actual number on ventilators that we know. Now, again, this isn't every state. So even if you double this number, and you double all of these numbers, it's still nowhere near the projections. The actual number of the reported people that we have on ventilators right now is 612. 612. So keep that in mind as you hear this going forward. They say the next 2 weeks are going to be awful. The next 2 weeks are going to be when it gets really bad, when it really starts ratcheting it up. And I hope to God it doesn't. But if it doesn't this week, we need to go back. We need to reopen. We need to seriously have a discussion about it at a bare minimum, because if the numbers, if we're doing all of this based on projections, remember, we're doing all of this based on the fear of what could be. And there's no doubt that things could get really, really bad. But what if they don't? What if they end up not getting really, really bad? We need to be able, the longer we stay shuttered, the harder it is to restart. And that's why I don't think we should stay shuttered for very much longer if we don't see these. Keep the social distancing in place. You want to delay this restart of sports for a month or so, that's fine. You want to ban on public gatherings for a while, okay. But if you can't keep the economy shut, the CDC, and this is another little peek behind the curtain as to why you could end up with these sorts of situations where the numbers don't necessarily coincide with reality. Because we've had just shy, between 9 and 10,000 deaths. I don't know what the number will be by the time you hear this. Between 9 and 10,000 deaths. If you average this out over the course of a couple of months, that is a slight uptick in the number of deaths per day in this country. Not out of the ordinary. But when you look at what the CDC guidelines are for deciding who died of coronavirus, you begin to think something's not right here. There has been a significant drop-off in the past 2 months of people, especially the last month, of people dying from pneumonia. Yeah, you may hear that and you think, yay, that's great. But there's more to it than that. The CDC guidelines, this is directly, this is the National Vital Statistics System from the Centers for Disease Control. It's at cdc.gov. It's linked in my piece on Town Hall. They put out COVID-19 alert number 2, March 24th, 2020. New ICD code introduced for COVID-19 deaths. This email is to alert you that newly introduced ICD codes have been implemented to accurately capture mortality data for the COVID disease 2019. On death certificates. Please read carefully and forward the email to state statistical staff in your office who are involved in the preparation of mortality data, as well as others who may have who may receive questions on the data that are released. You scroll through this and you say, what is the new code? And there's the code. It doesn't mean anything to you. It's U07.1. When is it implemented? Immediately. Will COVID-19 be the underlying cause? Say the underlying cause depends on what and where conditions are reported on death certificate. However, the rules for coding and selection for the underlying cause of death are expected to result in COVID-19 being the underlying cause more often than not. So that just gives you a little peek. We're not there yet. What happens if certificates and other suggested terms? What happens? Blah, blah, blah. And you get down to the end. And it says, should, now this is again, the Centers for Disease Control, the people who are spitting out the actual numbers, says, should COVID-19 be reported on the death certificate only with a confirmed test? Meaning, should people who are, we know, had coronavirus, be the only people who are reported to have died of coronavirus? Seems like a logical question. Should people with AIDS be the only people reported to have died from AIDS, or should people without AIDS be also reported? seems logical. The answer seems obvious, but you'd be wrong. Here's what the Centers for Disease Control guidance says. Quote, COVID-19 should be reported on the death certificate for all decedents where the disease caused or is assumed to have caused or contributed to death. Let me read that again, because this is important. This is polluting data. This is fudging the numbers. This is leading to, this is bad guidance. COVID-19 should be reported on the death certificate for all decedents where the disease caused or is assumed to have caused or contributed to death. Now, the part "or is assumed to have caused or contributed to death" is emphasized not only by me, because that should be troubling to everybody, but it's also in bold in the CDC guidance. They're really hammering that home. They say, look, if you believe it's there, if you believe it caused it, if you assume that it was involved in it or contributed to it, even though you don't have a test, even though you don't have any proof that this person actually had coronavirus, go ahead and say that it was, that they died from coronavirus. Now that's casting a very, very wide net. This is polluting the actual numbers, because if you look at the data, the number of people dying from the declared cause of pneumonia is down. Is down. Why? Because if somebody dies of pneumonia, they just go, they probably had coronavirus. Because if you can assume that they had it or caused it or whatever, no test necessary. If you think it contributed, it might have contributed, whether they had it or not, go ahead and report it. It's a catch-all. It's a catch-all. And I bet you there are hospital administrators saying, just look, don't waste your time. Just fill out the paperwork. Just put COVID-19 down as cause of death. Let's get on with it. It, you know, it may have been lung cancer. It may have been God knows what, heart attack, but they might have also had COVID-19. So just put it down. Just put it down. See, the government and the insurance companies aren't really, they're not going to go picking through the bills right now, okay? And say, wait a second, this 92-year-old had terminal pancreatic cancer right here. How can you say that this person died of COVID-19? Well, they were exhibiting symptoms. There's no way to disprove it. There is an incentive. Now, I'm not saying that all the 9 to 10,000 deaths that have been reported thus far are not legitimate, but some of them clearly aren't. Some of them clearly aren't if it just... all that it takes to qualify is to assume that it was there, or that it assume that it contributed to death without actually having any proof whatsoever that it was even somebody who was infected with it. It's inviting all sorts of problem. Again, garbage in, garbage out. Data is wildly important for understanding pandemics, not only to do a post-mortem, if you will, on what you just went through, but for the next time, so you can prepare better, so you can learn from it. But if the data is being polluted, if the data is just widely saying, hey, you know what, anything you want, anything you need, anything you think, if you think, if your spidey sense is tingling, if your women's intuition goes up, if the hair on the back of your neck says, this could be coronavirus, go ahead and report it as coronavirus. And how many journalists have asked any questions about this? None. Zero, zip, zilch. Wildly dangerous. Now, I don't know what the answer is. I don't know what the problem is. Like I said in my column, we'll know a lot more in a week. We will know a lot more in a week. And if we don't start seeing things that make sense, if we don't start seeing the models which the White House, we still don't know who's making the model, the official models for the White House. We know that they're sort of paying attention to various models, including this University of Washington one, but we don't know who the people are who are working on the models with the White House. For some weird reason, they say that they don't want to be known. They should have to answer. These are people who are determining our government's fate, our fate, really. They should be up there at the podium. They should be up there answering questions, especially if in a few days these numbers continue to diverge from reality so greatly. Somebody's going to have to answer these things. And I think that the President of the United States should demand that Fauci and Birx answer these questions if the modelers won't come out. And if they can't, then maybe it's time to dismiss Fauci and Birx, or at least replace them in their official positions, because somebody has to show up and say what in the hell's going on here and why these numbers don't add up if they continue to not to. Just to put a fine point on that last point, I have two stories here out of Florida from the same newspaper. It is the Daytona Beach News Journal. The first one is from the 31st of March. Its headline, Coronavirus in Florida, Volusia and Flagler, meaning counties, from zero on March 1st to thousands of cases now. And you think, okay, well, they must be getting crushed then, right? The story says, from a month of coverage of the pandemic, the News Journal, blah, 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 at the beginning of March, people in Volusia and Flagler counties weren't especially concerned about COVID-19. They continued to travel around the world. The notion of social distancing was a foreign concept. Bike week and spring break were on the way. Hotels were looking forward to a bump in business. Restaurants were booming. The new retail area, the intersection of Interstate 95 and LPGA Boulevard, was booming, as were other shopping venues. Coronavirus. Many people agreed with President Donald Trump that Florida and the rest of the country were safe. That wasn't what the president was saying. And they say how quickly things have changed. Now, with over 6,300 positive coronavirus cases in the state of Florida, over 75 deaths, and over 770 people hospitalized, the pandemic has become a disruption of historic proportions. Now, you heard those numbers. Sounds pretty horrifying, right? Then you go to April 3rd. April 3rd, this was sent to me by a listener. The headline, Coronavirus. Volusia, Flagler, and St. John's Hospital bed usage is low. What? Yes, the same newspaper that was just saying we're going to be overrun, it's all hell, just a few days earlier, reports, quote, as many begin to fear the thought of hospitals exceeding their capacity due to an influx of coronavirus patients, hospital officials in Volusia, Flagler, and St. John's counties say not to worry. Joe Smith, Chief Medical Officer of Advent Health Deland, I don't know what the hell that is, but I assume it's a hospital network, said the hospitals are ready and that they've had the experience of seeing how situations played out in other countries. Quote, we've been able to prepare for this, he said. We are creating the additional capacity and having our elective procedures ramped down. That makes room for more critically ill patients. Between the nine hospitals in Volusia, Flagler, and St. John's counties, there are a total of 1,048 hospital beds, 938 of which are empty. That's right. 938 of the 1,048 beds available are empty. That means there are 110 people in the hospital for any number, for whatever reason you go to a hospital. Of those, 186 are in the ICU of those beds. The 100 There are 186 ICU beds in those hospitals. 102 of those ICU beds are empty. Again, 186 intensive care units beds available, 102 are empty, meaning currently 84 beds are occupied in the intensive care unit. There's no indication how many of them are related to coronavirus or how many of them are just because of car accidents, because somebody's sick, whatever. But again, we're not, now this is anecdotal. This is one place. This is one little area in Florida. It's not indicative of everything that's going on in the country. And obviously there's been a big outbreak in New York, but even New York isn't overwhelmed. We were told that it was going to get bad this week. And if it doesn't get bad this week, I think we need to seriously look at and reevaluate what we're doing and try to figure out if maybe, just maybe, there's a better way. Lastly today, I'll leave you with this, just because, to illustrate how insane our liberal friends are. This is from the CBC, the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. I grew up with CBC Hockey Night in Canada in Detroit. Channel 9 bled over the border, and we got it. And it was fine for watching playoff hockey and all that, and curling on weekends and things. But this is kind of an illustration of just how pathetic the left has become. The headline for non-binary musician Ray Spoon, a cervical cancer diagnosis came with an extra dimension of anxiety. Victoria-based musician received gendered cancer diagnosis after canceling the tour due to COVID-19. No matter what goes on, leftists are always leftists and leftists are always insane. A cancer diagnosis is a life-changing moment, especially difficult during a pandemic. But for non-binary musician Ray Spoon, spelled R-A-E, because apparently a Y is a dude's way of spelling it, who knows, the diagnosis has stirred up another layer of complication. Spoon, who uses the singular they pronoun, God, these people, has been in the middle of canceling flights for a planned tour of the UK, Canada, and Europe due to COVID-19 pandemic when they received a phone call from their doctor saying Spoon had tested positive for cervical cancer. I think I was at peace with the my job is going to be really different for a long time thing, Spoon told guest host Karen Murlow of CBC's All Points West, referring to the effects of the pandemic. But the diagnosis was another shock altogether, and one that's been made difficult because cervical cancer is what Spoon called a gendered cancer. Yes, a gendered cancer. This woman is diagnosed with cancer, and she's more upset that the literature regarding the type of cancer that she has, cervical cancer, it's for women, happens to women because dudes don't have a cervix. She's more upset because it's a gendered cancer. You can't make this stupid stuff up. Quote, all of the information I looked up, it's very hard to find any reference or any resources that don't involve gendering the person who has cervical cancer as a woman, they said. That's because you're a woman. It's because you have a vagina, and that's what defines you as a woman. That's your gender, okay? I don't care how you like to live or what you like to run around in while you're lamenting the demise of Lilith Fair or whatever the hell it is you do for a living on a general scheme of things. But if you want to go around and pretend that you're a man, okay, knock yourself out. Simple and done and finished. Just die of cervical cancer. That's all you have to do. You can really stick it to society. As a non-binary person, Spoon does not identify as a man or a woman. Spoon says having a gendered cancer means that people will make assumptions about their gender and how they should be treated. Yeah, they'll make assumptions like you have a vagina and you have cancer in your vagina and we're going to cure that cancer in your vagina, or we're not. What do you want us to do? We can all pretend you don't have a vagina and you can die. How's that? We can pretend you're a Ken doll, and the doctor will look and go, psh, I don't know. I can't get in there. There's nothing there. It's just a smooth surface. I don't know what's going on. or they can try and save your life. Whichever, if you want to really live your delusion, and then die your delusion. You'll be remembered by very few people, but you'll be remembered for making a commitment to your craft. But in general, my God, are these people, these people are nuts. These people are insane. These people are crazy. Spoon, who came out as transgender 20 years ago and then non-binary 8 years ago, says the thought of being misgendered and being addressed with the wrong pronouns during treatment is an added stressor at a time already full of anxiety. Well, then don't get any treatment. Problem solved. There you go. Congratulations. That you might have to have a gynecologist to come in and examine you every once in a while. Don't let it curb your crazy-ass psyche. You just pretend that you don't have anything down there. And then die shortly thereafter of a treatable cancer. You freak. You weirdo. Not a freak because you think you're non-binary and no gender rules apply to you. You're a freak because that's what bothers you at a point when you have cancer. You're more concerned with the literature not reflecting the 0.0001% of the population who have the same mental disorder that you do. It's hard. I swore a couple times in the episode, but it's tough not to when you're talking about somebody who goes by the name of Ray Spoon and is pissed off about things like their cervical cancer, letting people onto the fact that they have a vagina, and then maybe they'll think that they're a woman. Only because you are, lady. That is all the time we have for today. Stay sane while everybody else around you goes crazy. Thank you for listening. I'll be back here tomorrow with another exciting episode. See you then.